طفلة تمتطيه قوس قزح، طفلة.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly broadcast of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's brutal occupation and colonization of their homeland. The purpose of This Week in Palestine is to feature the Palestinian narrative, the Palestinian voice that is too often missing in the presentation of news and analysis in the American mainstream media. And that is needed today more than ever. The response of the United States government to the invasion of portions of Israel by Hamas was predictable. Our government totally backs Netanyahu's government by calling for an all-out Israeli military assault on the Gazan population rather than a focus on Hamas. It is collective punishment in spades, which is a crime under international law. It is the kind of diplomacy that drove us into Vietnam and Iraq, Afghanistan, to name a few. Rather, Biden should push Israel to execute an immediate ceasefire to stop the senseless bombing of civilian populations and thereby exert some diplomatic moral leadership. It also must be said that the senseless slaughter of civilians by Hamas during their attack on Israel must also be condemned. That needs to be called out and a distinction made between Hamas and the Gazan people. The media also is maintaining its support of Israel. You hear almost no Palestinian voices in their reporting and commentary, except for Democracy Now! On Free Speech TV and Al Jazeera. The distortion of reporting by such disproportionate coverage fuels the cover-up of the Israeli apartheid occupation and colonization of Palestine, which of course has been the root cause of the Palestinian resistance for over 70 years. Today on This Week in Palestine, we feature Palestinian voices giving context to this past week's crisis. These are voices which, for the main part, were not heard on commercial television. The first voice is Electronic Intifada's founder, Ali Abu Nima, as interviewed by Al Jazeera early in this past week.
Well, Ali Abu Nima is the co-founder of Electronic Intifada, an independent online news publication focusing on Palestine. He joins me live from Chicago. And if we can begin with Joe Biden's comments in the last hour or so, in the last few hours or so, are you surprised at all by anything that he had to say?
Not at all. Israel's occupation, dispossession, ethnic cleansing and persecution of the Palestinian people has for decades been enabled by the United States. And in the context of the almost explicitly genocidal threats from Benjamin Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant, his defense minister, we should take Joe Biden's statements as a green light to Israel to perpetrate more of the kind of massacres that it has been carrying out against the Palestinian people now for almost 80 years with total impunity.
And taking from that, you assuming that those massacres are just going to continue and become even worse. We were talking to an Israeli military analyst who said that tens of thousands of troops will be building up along the Gaza Strip there ready to invade. Is that your fear too?
It's possible. We don't really know. What we can say for certain is that other than causing mass destruction and death, it will not change the situation that Israel is a colonial occupying power and the Palestinian people are struggling justly for their liberation, and anti-colonial liberation wars are something the world has seen, whether in Vietnam, whether in throughout Africa, South Africa in particular in recent decades. And an indigenous people that is fighting for its existence will fight back with great motivation. Mm. And that's what we saw in terms of the ability today of the resistance in Gaza to surprise Israel strategically and tactically, and to actually liberate and hold Palestinian territory beyond the borders of Gaza. Despite the fact that they have far fewer resources than Israel and don't have the backing of any superpowers. Mm. That's kind of a sign of the motivation of Palestinians to liberate themselves once and for all from decades of living under the boot of this really brutal colonial regime whose brutality is being highlighted in the response from Israeli leaders.
Do you think that Hamas needs some of its allies in the region to step up here and actively get involved militarily?
Clearly, Hamas has allies in the region, and I suspect that some of the incredible tactics we've seen in terms of using drones to destroy Israel's vaunted Merkava tanks, to destroy automated machine gun nests, and to use other surprising tactical methods we've seen were developed in conjunction with those allies. Obviously, I'm not privy to the discussions they have, so I don't know what they may have in store. But what I can say is that the Palestinian people in their just liberation struggle have every right to receive assistance from wherever they can get it. That's a right that an occupied people exercising its legitimate right to resist has.
This has been called by many people a complete military and intelligence failure on the part of Israel to not have any idea that this military operation was coming. Is that how you see it as well?
Clearly, it was a colossal failure. I think it's an example of Israel believing its own arrogant propaganda about its own military, technological, and indeed racial superiority over the Palestinian people. They underestimated the ability of this indigenous people besieged in Gaza to devise tactics that would confound their oppressors and persecutors. So it is a massive failure, on a par, I've seen people saying, and I believe this, on a par with the October 1973 failure when Egypt managed to breach the so-called impregnable Bar-Lev line along the Suez Canal. But in this case, it really is historic because for the first time, the battle was taken into a territory that Israel considers its own and onto Israeli territory in a quite dramatic and stunning way. Of course, there's no doubt that Israel will do what it always does, which is seek revenge against the vulnerable, against civilians. Remember that half the population of Gaza are children, more than two-thirds are refugees, and already we have Israeli ministers saying that they're going to cut off the electricity to Gaza, which is a war crime. And we have the threats from Netanyahu and Gallant that are, as I said, nearly explicit, if not outright explicit, threats of genocide. And the crimes, the further crimes that they commit against the Palestinian people will not just be on the hands of those Israeli leaders, but also on the hands of Joe Biden, the European Union, and its member states who arm, fund, support this genocidal apartheid regime, one that doesn't believe the Palestinian people exist or have a right to exist, that has declared itself a state for Jews only, where only Jews will have sovereignty and self-determination. Mm. That's the logic of genocide, the logic of apartheid, and this is This is where it leads. And for too long, the world has sat by and allowed Israel to behave in this savage and barbaric way against the Palestinian people. Mm. And this is the inevitable result.
Okay. Just finally, where do we go from here? Is this going to continue to escalate, or is there any room at all for de-escalation?
I've said many times before on Al Jazeera and elsewhere that, yes, it's going to escalate into an ever-increasing horror show. What we are seeing now is exactly what many of us have predicted, and it's the inevitable result of granting impunity to a regime that has absolutely no respect for international law, for basic humanity, and for the rights of the Palestinian people, who, this has to be said, this is often not mentioned, but the Palestinian people are the majority population in historic Palestine, in what is Israel, the Gaza Strip, and the West Bank. And this majority population has to have its rights, has to have its liberation, or there will be continued escalating, horrifying bloodshed. Let's say it clearly: Israel and its enablers are solely responsible, solely and fully responsible for what we see happening, and they can end it. But they have chosen this path, and they are reaping exactly what they have sown.
Okay, thank you so much. As always, we appreciate your time and your insights here on Al Jazeera. That is Ali Abu Nima, a co-founder of Electronic Intifada. Thank you so much.
Our next voice, Palestinian academic Rafat Almir, was recorded in Gaza as he sat in his home with his wife and six children, as the Israeli firestorm was exploding all around them. Here is Rafat Almir, interviewed by Amy Goodman on Democracy Now!
We begin today's show in Gaza, where we're joined by Rafat Almir. He's a Palestinian academic and activist, the editor of the book Gaza Writes Back, co-editor of Gaza Unsilenced. In 2021, he wrote an op-ed in the New York Times headlined, "My Child Asks, Can Israel Destroy Our Building If the Power Is Out?" That was 2 years ago, Rafat. Describe what's happening right now in Gaza.
Thank you, Amy, for having me, and thank you for this coverage. What's happening is what Israel has always worked to achieve. Israeli leaders and officials are speaking about sending Gaza to the Stone Ages. Israeli officials are speaking about destroying Gaza. They are focusing on damage and destruction rather than precision. We speak about whole blocks destroyed, all government buildings, 20 UN facilities, including schools and clinics, all the roads, all the infrastructures, all the roads leading to the major hospitals, especially the one in the heart of Gaza City, were destroyed. So Israel bombs Palestinian families as they sleep, as they stay in the safety, so to speak, of their home, and then bombs the ways that lead help and aid and ambulances to these areas, and then bombs the ambulances that try to help those people. That's why we have about 800 Palestinian casualties. We speak about more than 400 children, women, and elderly people. Most of them were killed in the safety of their homes without any prayer warning. Not that any warning would justify this Israeli brutality. Israeli war criminals are speaking about Second World War level of destruction against the Gaza Strip. What is happening in Gaza is complete and utter extermination of the non-Jewish population in occupied Palestine. As you mentioned, Israel ordered a medieval hermetic siege from air and sea. Israel has also just bombed the only way out through Egypt, the Rafah crossing. The only way out is what's happening, what we are foreseeing is slow starvation, slow genocide. Maybe Israel is going to push us all into the sea. And I think what is making it even more difficult than before is that the whole world, not even lip service, all American and European countries and politicians are rushing to pledge allegiance to Israel and to Netanyahu. Israeli American politicians, American presidential hopefuls are literally calling for genocide. American mainstream media is not pushing back against Israeli officials, calling for the collateral damage of hundreds of thousands of Palestinians in Gaza. Why is this happening? Because we refuse to live under occupation. We refuse to live in total submission. We want freedom. We want this occupation to end. This is not a state of war, as one of your guests just mentioned. This is a state of occupation that started over 75 years, that started with the British Empire giving Palestine to the Zionist movement in 1917.
And Rafat, you mentioned the Gaza's border with Egypt. What has been the response of the Egyptian government to that border crossing, which, as we understand, is also bombed by Israel as well?
I'm not following closely because we barely have any electricity or internet. But what I heard is that the Rafah border is now closed, so people cannot leave. And also, when we talk about people leaving, very few people in Gaza have visas or passports that would allow them to leave. I'm reading a report just now that Israel is even warning to strike any aid coming from the Egyptian side into Gaza. So with no food, no electricity, and no water, we can only expect what Israel has been working to achieve, what Israel and Israeli officials and politicians are promising now. Some are calling for striking Gaza with a nuclear bomb. Can you imagine that? And many other Israeli officials are using Nazi discourse and Nazi language, talking about Palestinians as savages and animals that need to be exterminated and that Gaza needs to be turned into a parking lot. This is what we are dealing with. We're dealing with a systematic, structural, colonial attempt to annihilate and exterminate the Palestinians with the aid and support of the West and American tax money. America is sending $8 billion. This is really insane. America is also sending warships and bombs and bullets for Israel to kill more and more Palestinians.
And what are you asking for people in other parts of the world and other governments to do?
I think the governments are not only complicit or giving the green light, they are participating actively. The shameful statement from France, Italy, UK, and Germany, and America the other night was a hideous attempt to justify Israeli massacres and genocide taking place in Gaza. We have no hope in these countries. We have no hope in these governments. At least now, the only hope we have is in the growing popular support in America, in the movements the human rights and the rights movements in America and across Europe to take to the streets, to pressure their politicians into putting an end to this dark episode of not only the history of the Middle East, but also the history of humanity. If people are asking how was the Holocaust allowed and other genocides in Africa and across the world, now you can see this live on TV, live on social media. Palestinians, whole blocks destroyed, hospitals, schools, businesses. We are speaking about thousands and thousands of housing units destroyed by Israel. So my message to the free people of the world is to move, to pressure, to mobilize, and to take to the streets.
Rafat Aladir, you are the father of six. How old are your children? And can you describe what it's like to live there right now? Now, Israel says that it has 1,500 dead Hamas fighters. That's outside of Gaza. The number inside Gaza is nearing 800. Describe the bombing strikes now. This is before Israel does what it's threatening to do, which is lace complete siege. They've said they've cut off electricity, they've cut off gas, food, etc., but actually ground troops moving in.
Like I said, this has been systematically happening for over seven decades. It was the noose around Gaza's neck was tightened 15 years ago, and it's being tightened even further now. The situation is unspeakable. You can't describe what's happening in words. We speak about thousands, hundreds and thousands of Israeli bombs and shells targeting all areas of the Gaza Strip. The kids can't sleep. The kids can't eat. The kids can't even speak. Most of the time, they're just mute, silent, shaking out of fear, sometimes whimpering because of how close the bombs are wherever you are in Gaza. And again, how the houses shake every time there is a bomb around. And this is happening again all over Gaza Strip. Israel is telling people, is pushing people forcibly to leave out of their homes and asking, urging them to go to certain places like the city center or the UN places, shelters. And then Israel bombs the roads leading to these areas and bombs these crowded areas. Yesterday, there was a massacre. Israel killed about 60 Palestinians in Jabalia refugee camp in a local market where there is a UN school, people taking shelter there. So whether it is my kids or any Palestinian kid or any Palestinian, no one is safe. No place is safe. Israel is bombing everywhere. Israel is lying. And that's something, thank you for highlighting this, that Israel sometimes, once every 100 times, 1,000 times, it sends a message warning 10 minutes before and asks, for example, a huge building of 50 housing units to leave. And you can't take anything with you if you have only this limited time to leave. And when people leave, wherever they go, they will be chased and hunted down by the bombs. These are, again, barbaric, and these are an extension to Israeli attempts to exterminate Palestinians, whether in Gaza, in Jerusalem, or in the West Bank.
Rafat, let me ask you about that. You say Israel gives a warning, and now Hamas is saying if they don't get that warning before a building is bombed, they will kill one hostage for each one of those bombings. Can you talk about how much support there is for Hamas within Gaza, the government of Gaza?
Amy, I'm sorry, who translated that message for you? The message was clear. It was a threat, and it clearly stated with the bare minimum of humanity that Israel sends a warning before it bombs a family home. And when we speak about homes in Gaza and in Palestine, in Gaza, we speak about houses that have like five or six or even seven housing units, flats, where three generations live in the same place. That's why Israel exterminated more than 30 families. Most of their family members were killed because it bombs without sending a message. The message from Hamas was clear. Send a warning before you bomb, meaning don't bomb Palestinian homes with the kids and the women and the elderly and the young people inside. So this is what's going on. And people in Gaza want to be safe. That we don't want to be killed. And it seems that this is a desperate call for mediators to interfere. Stop this. And it's already... it already happened that Israel, and I was saying this the other day, that Israel seems to be bent to kill Israeli captives, Israeli soldiers held in Gaza, more than they are interested in killing Palestinian fighters and Palestinian children, because Israel does not want to negotiate, does not want to release the almost 5,000 Palestinian, political Palestinian prisoners in Israeli prison. So the idea about the framing of this is incorrect, is inaccurate.
And at the same Rafat, time, I do want to clarify what you said. You said that Hamas has threatened to kill a hostage if Israel doesn't warn that it is going to bomb a residential home.
Exactly. Is that much to ask? I don't think this is much to ask. And I think this is more of a desperate call to save both Palestinian children and families, and at the same time, the Israeli soldiers kept in Gaza. Now, what's happening here is that Israel is sending disinformation and fabrication all over the internet, on social media, and many mainstream media agencies and outlets are swallowing and repeating these military lies against Palestinians to demonize the Palestinians. And that's why we see so many Americans, sadly, especially officials and politicians, presidential hopefuls, calling for genocide against Palestinians, because there is misinformation. But at the same time, they think that if they do this, if they say this, it's going to bring them more money from the Israeli lobby in Washington, D.C.
And Rifat, you've told the BBC recently that the scenes right now in Gaza are, quote, exactly like the Warsaw Ghetto uprising. Could you elaborate on that?
Exactly. If you have seen the pictures from Gaza, we speak about complete devastation and destruction to universities, to schools, to mosques, to businesses, to clinics, to roads, infrastructure, to water lines. If I Googled this morning Warsaw Ghetto pictures, and I got pictures I couldn't differentiate. Somebody tweeted four pictures and asked to tell which one is from Gaza and which one is from the Warsaw Ghetto. They are remarkably the same, because the perpetrator is almost using the same strategies against a minority, against the oppressed, the people, the battered people, the besieged people, whether it was in Warsaw Ghetto, the Jews in Warsaw Ghetto in the past, or Palestinian Muslims and Christians in the Gaza Strip. So the similarity is uncanny. Israeli officials using Nazi language discourse to, even there was a tweet from the Jewish Congress that says the number of Jews that died on Saturday is more than the number of Jews that died on any given day during the Holocaust. And this is not Holocaust revisionism, it's Holocaust denial, because this is objectively and statistically incorrect completely and utterly. The Israelis, the Zionist movement, the Israeli government is willing to abuse and engage in Holocaust denialism in order to justify what's going to happen, what is happening, and what's going to happen in Gaza in the coming hours and days. I think this is dangerous, and this has to be stopped. The similarities between Gaza and the Warsaw Ghetto should be a waking up call to all free people around the world.
Rifat El-Adir, we want to thank you for being with us. Palestinian academic, activist, editor of the book Gaza Writes Back, co-editor of Gaza Unsilenced, speaking to us from Gaza City.
Also recorded on Democracy Now! Is Israeli dissenter Haggai Matar, founder and journalist for the critical Israeli magazine Plus 972. Here is Haggai Matar.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Israel is continuing its bombardment of Gaza City, has extended its mobilization of reservists. For more, we're joined by Haggai Matar, an Israeli journalist and activist who serves as the executive director of Plus 972 magazine. That's the area code of Israel and the occupied territories. Haggai Matar is a conscientious objector who refused to serve in the Israeli army. His new piece is headlined, Gaza's Shock Attack Has Terrified Israelis. It should also unveil the context. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Haggai. As we speak to you in Tel Aviv, tell us the context that you feel is so important.
Thank you, Amy. I think when I wrote that piece already on Saturday, the shock was just in its initial phases. We have not yet learned the entire scope of the horror of the atrocities in the south of Israel, the hundreds of people who were massacred in their homes and at a music festival, entire communities decimated. Those stories were just seeping through gradually, and the shock of that tragedy, that atrocity, was just beginning to land. And what I felt important to say, while also recognizing this collective shock and the dreadfulness of this attack, was also to understand the history of this, how we as Israelis for many years have become, have developed a sense of immunity that in the context of Gaza wars, for example, Israel could bomb Gaza as it is doing now and wipe out entire families, destroy entire neighborhoods, not be held accountable. And when Gazans throw rockets back, almost all of them are intercepted by the Iron Dome. So the casualty rate between Israelis and Palestinians in these past wars over the past decade or so has been 1 to 100, 1 to 200 or so. Just now, actually, there were air sirens here in Tel Aviv, and I didn't move from my desk because I know there's Iron Dome, and I feel pretty safe. That feeling of safety was cracked and went away with one whiff of that attack on Saturday. But it was important for me to remind Israelis and people abroad that that feeling of defenselessness is one that Palestinians have experienced for the past few decades, definitely people in Gaza who have been attacked routinely by Israel. So when we think about how we understand the Hamas attack without justifying it, but also recognizing that it is not unprovoked or unilateral on the one hand, and also as we think about the next steps, we need to understand there is no military solution. These recurring attacks on Gaza bring nothing but death and destruction and no hope for any of us.
And Haggai, about this issue that's been raised, that this was an unprovoked or unilateral attack, you've written that the, quote, the Israeli army is routinely raiding into Palestinian cities and refugee camps. The far-right government is giving settlers an entirely free hand to set up new illegal outposts and launch pogroms on Palestinian towns and villages, with soldiers accompanying the settlers and killing or maiming Palestinians trying to defend their homes. Could you talk about how the Palestinians have experienced this new right-wing government, especially this extreme right-wing government in Israel, in their daily lives?
Sure. So I think, first of all, for context for that as well, we need to remember nothing about what this government is doing is entirely new. The attacks in Gaza, the settlement expansion, the attacks on Palestinian communities in West Bank, none of this is unprecedented. This far-right government is only taking things one step further, which, you know, needs to be contextualized, but also we need to recognize the places where things are getting worse. And we are definitely seeing, since the election of this government, a much freer hand for settlers to do basically whatever they want in the West Bank. There's absolutely no guardrail, no limitations on what settlers can do. If they want to attack Palestinian communities and set their houses ablaze, they will have soldiers accompanying them. If they want to set up new outposts on private Palestinian land, they can do that. If they want to go into the middle of Nablus to pray in the middle of one of the biggest Palestinian cities in the West Bank, they can do that, and soldiers will accompany them and protect them. So what Palestinians are feeling, very much related to what I was saying before, is being defenseless, because the Palestinian police is not allowed and does not offer them defense. And when they try to defend themselves, soldiers would shoot them to death. So that is the reality that Palestinians have been feeling for a very long time, and increasingly over the past few months.
And this whole issue of how the United States and the other countries, major countries in the world, have essentially ignored the unresolved Palestinian-Israeli question now for years, hoping to negotiate just with the governments of the region and not deal with the central issue. What do you how do you think that this has played a role in the desperate attacks now of Hamas into Israel?
I think it is very much connected. As we're talking about the tools Palestinians have for resistance and the bargaining chips they can bring with them to the negotiating table, Palestinians never had too much to offer. Basically, they're asking Israel, rightly, to leave their territory, to have an independent state, But all they can offer in return is the lack of violence, so peace. And they used to have this other bargaining chip, which is if you make peace with us, you'll get as a bonus the entire Arab world, the entire Muslim world that was committed, at least outspokenly committed to supporting Palestinians and not normalizing relations with Israel. Ever since the Abraham Accords, championed by President Trump in 2020, 2021, and now with the normalization deal that is being brokered by President Biden with Saudi Arabia, Palestinians are seeing those last bargaining chips just slipping away. Netanyahu has always said, we can have peace with the Arab world without Palestinians. We can just go over their heads. And Arab nations and countries and governments and the U.S. government in brokering this have proved Netanyahu right. So Palestinians without those abilities are seeing fewer and fewer options to claim their just cause against Israeli apartheid. I don't think that justifies massacring hundreds of people in their homes and destroying entire communities of civilians. But at the same time, I understand the context in which Palestinians are feeling more and more desperate and pushed to the point of doing these things.
Haggai Matar, you are a conscientious objector in the Israeli military. You refuse to serve. Can you talk about overall Israeli reaction right now? And are Israelis concerned about the total siege of and possible ground invasion of Gaza, which the UN, by the way, the siege has called illegal?
No, not at all. It's actually deeply troubling to see how much rejoicing there is in the siege, in the attacks. We're seeing people, even people associated with the center and with the left, talking Haaretz journalists, for example, not all of them, obviously, but some have said this is a time to cause great damage to Gaza. This is time to extract many deaths in Gaza. So it is very, very troubling and painful to see how out of a very understandable feeling that I myself also share of shock, of defenselessness, of the tragedy of the massacres in the south, people are taking that and translating that into saying the only answer is revenge. I think it is a very dark mirror to look at when you understand that these same atrocities committed by Hamas came out of that feeling of anger, anguish, and dread of Israeli attacks. And now, as a response to that, to those atrocities, Israelis are supporting their own atrocities again against Gaza. And this seems like a dead end, almost literally, for both of us.
Haggai Matar, Israeli journalist, activist, executive director of Plus972 magazine, Israeli Jewish conscientious objector. He refused to serve in the Israeli army.
Our final voice is Columbia University professor Rashid Khalidi, who appeared the first day of the invasion on Democracy Now!
We've been to Gaza and Jerusalem. Now we're joined here in New York by Rashid Khalidi, Edward Said, professor of modern Arab studies at Columbia University, author of a number of books, including The 100 Years War on Palestine. Professor Khalidi, thank you for being with us as you listen to voices of Orly Noy in Jerusalem, of Raji Sarani, the human rights lawyer in Gaza, the attack we heard on air live, and Ofer Kassif, the Knesset member of Israel. Can you respond to what has taken place and what it looks like is about to take place? Israeli military equipment and tanks are headed down to Gaza now.
I'm afraid that the horrific casualties among civilians, Israelis and increasingly Palestinians, is just the beginning of what's going to be a awful, awful, awful massacre in Gaza. The desire for revenge after the killing of a very large number, hundreds apparently, of innocent Israeli civilians is going to lead to a horrific massacre in Gaza of probably many, many more people than we can imagine. And I agree with what Raji said, of course, my friend Raji, who I hope is okay. And I agree with what Orly said and with what Ofer Cassis said. The war crimes don't justify other war crimes. And we are about to see horrific war crimes. But I think there are two things that have to be added. This has to be put within a context. And the context is not just occupation. The context is settler colonialism and apartheid. The people of Gaza, the refugees in Gaza, originate in the areas where Hamas fighters were attacking in the last couple of days. Those were Palestinian towns and villages in 1948. The ethnic cleansing of Palestine led to the cooping up of what are now 2.4 million people in Gaza. Today is Indigenous Peoples Day in the United States. These are the indigenous people of the southern parts of Israel that the Hamas fighters were attacking over the past few days. That's the first thing. The second thing is, I think that we're about to see a paradigm shift. The idea that you can coop up 5 million people, put them behind walls, tighten the siege on them, use an eyedropper to allow them some food, some water, some electricity. That idea has exploded as a result of the horrific events of the past 2.5 days. This cannot continue. It's not just a matter of occupation. We have to recognize that you cannot treat an entire people the way Israel, not just under this neo-fascist government, but under all of its previous governments, have treated them. You cannot expel 750,000 people in 1948 and not expect the return of the repressed. You cannot commit daily violence against Palestinians. One Palestinian has died every day this year, in fact, slightly more, in the occupied West Bank. You cannot expect that not to lead to a reaction. The reaction will be violent. The reaction sometimes may include things that are unquestionably war crimes. But that kind of pressure put on an entire people over 750,000 will necessarily, inevitably bring a violent reaction. And this pressure cooker that the Palestinians are in, which the Hamas military commander listed, he said what they're doing in Jerusalem, trying to take over the Al-Aqsa Mosque and turn it into a site of Jewish prayer. What they are doing in the occupied West Bank in terms of the effective annexation of more and more Palestinian land to Israel and the application of Israeli law to Israelis and military law to Palestinians. Apartheid, two legal systems in one place. The imprisonment of 5,000 Palestinians and the administrative detention of hundreds. And finally, the siege of Gaza. When Gallant, Yoav Gallant, the Minister of Defense, announced that he was cutting off fuel, food, water, and electricity to Gaza, he called the Gazans human animals. That's 2.4 million people who are being treated as if they are animals. They're not Hamas fighters. As Raji said, the fighters are one thing. Hamas is one thing. Hamas has imposed itself on the people of Gaza. The people of Gaza are the ones who are going to suffer. As in every one of these wars, almost all of the casualties are going to be civilians that Israel has waged on Gaza. This will be the fifth or the sixth attack on Gaza. And I'm very, very afraid that Raji is right. We are going to see unparalleled massacres. But I think we have to see that this maybe be the end of an era when people in Washington and people in Arab capitals assumed you could just fly over Palestine, ignore it, and pretend that we're in a new Middle East of peace while an entire people is living under this kind of incredible oppression in a pressure cooker. It had to explode.
And talk about what's happening now. You have the Republicans attacking Biden, saying that it's his support for Iran, making that $6 billion deal unfreezing Iranian assets that has allowed this to happen. The Wall Street Journal saying Iran is behind this. The White House pushing back. Blinken saying they don't have the evidence at this point. What this means, and also Hezbollah on the border of Lebanon and the incursion this weekend as well.
Well, I mean, the possibility of a wider conflict should terrify everybody. And instead of moving aircraft carriers, the United States should be trying to defuse the situation. Instead, I think they're blindly going ahead with the policies that they have followed in the past. You do not send presents, as President Biden has done, to an apartheid government that is moving towards basically destroying the protections of the Israeli constitution for Israeli Jews and annexing the West Bank And that's what this administration has been doing. That's what previous administrations have done. We finance this occupation. We finance this violence. There are American weapons that are being used today, right now, in Gaza, to kill innocent civilians in violation of U.S. law. And American politicians blithely talk as if they live on another planet. I think, though, that the ground has shifted. And even though American politicians live in Never Never Land, as far as Palestine is concerned, reality is going to intrude itself sooner or later. There is a widespread revulsion across the Arab world against what Israel does in Palestine. Authoritarian, dictatorial, absolute monarchies are trying to ignore that, ignore the feelings of their own people, the sentiments of their own people. That's not going to work. You cannot make peace over the bodies of Palestinians. That's not peace. That is the peace of the dead. And the kind of repression that is being exerted day in, day out, theft of land, expansion of settlements, and so on, necessarily, inevitably, is going to bring a reaction. So whether the people living in Washington, D.C., and in their own alternative reality, believe it today or tomorrow, sooner or later, I think that reality is going to dawn. You cannot do this forever.
The National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan, just 10 days ago said, you know, it has been very quiet in the Middle East, which has allowed the U.S. to move on to other areas of the world. Very quiet, he said. And I'm wondering if you can comment on that. And do you think what led to this attack by Hamas fighters on Saturday had anything to do with Saudi Arabia and Israel normalizing relations at the behest of the United States?
I don't doubt that that was a factor. I think the basic factor was that people couldn't live under these circumstances. And Hamas has basically acted in a way involving enormous brutality against civilians, things that are unquestionably war crimes. But it has acted in a way to shatter that whole paradigm. I think people are thinking very carefully in places that have normalized with Israel. The other thing that should be said, I think Orly mentioned this is a massive intelligence failure on the part of American intelligence, and especially on the part of the Israeli intelligence services. They had absolutely no idea this was coming. They transferred 3 battalions from the Gaza front to the West Bank to protect settler rampages against Palestinians, denuding the towns on the southern borders of the Gaza Strip of the people who could have defended against the attack by Hamas. This was one of the great deception operations in modern military history, and people are going to teach this. Leaving aside the war crimes, they're going to teach this in military academies for years and years to come. This is on level with the 1973 war in terms of deception and an entirely mistaken concept on the part of Israelis, thinking that you could do this to Gaza forever and that they would just lie down and take it.
And Rashid Khalidi,
this
news just came out from Times of Israel, also from the Associated Press. Egyptian intelligence repeatedly told Israel Hamas was planning something big. Warnings were discounted. This, according to an intelligence official in Cairo. Your thoughts on this in the last 30 seconds?
It's very similar to what happened before the 1973 war, when Israel was getting intelligence that the Egyptian and Syrian armies were planning a major attack. And the conception, the conceptia in Hebrew, that these people would never do such a thing, they're not capable of this. The arrogance that was involved in ignoring those intelligence reports in 1973 and in 2023 are among the things that led to this catastrophic outcome, which I think is going to change a lot of things in the Middle East in the months and years to come.
You have been listening to Palestinian Voices Responding to the Current Crisis in Gaza. And that is our program this morning. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You'll find us here at WZBC 90.3 FM every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Time and on kkrn.org. where you can stream us live every Friday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. We thank you for joining us, and we hope you will be with us again next Sunday and every Sunday for another edition of This Week in Palestine. This is your host, John Roberts, wishing you a good morning.